Hello, everybody. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are here once more turning towards life. We have a beautiful source this week from Justin called The Wildness in Our Hearts. And maybe anybody who knows me a little bit from any piece of life or even turning towards life maybe knows that wildness is an extremely wonderful piece of life that I'm always excited to talk about. So I'm really glad, Justin, that you brought this today and from the lovely John O'Donoghue as well. And it's a very sunny day in London. I've got a WhatsApp message from a Turning Towards Life listener on my phone, ready to listen to. And I'm feeling that thing, Justin, of people responding to us and saying something in commentary to what we're doing or saying thank you or what it is that they want to bring to us. And I just want to say how grateful I am for every single time someone either supports us, buys us a coffee, sends us a message, sends us an email. We both, Justin, don't we just share it with each other? And this joy is present for both of us when we realize something's landing in the world and it's having an impact and people are listening and taking part in the conversation. So I'm filled with that this morning, like an anticipatory, oh, there's a message I've got to listen to about turning towards life. I'm really grateful. And yeah, I'm just as ever in awe of the being here-ness again, and that we just do this. It's just a piece of life that happens now. And I'm really grateful for that. I'm grateful for you, Justin, of constantly having things to bring and the wondering as always of, are we going to run out of sources? Is the world gonna we're gonna reach the end or something? And always we seem to find something which is miraculous. And you're going to read, I'm going to read, and we're going to see how our usness takes us into the conversation together.
Thanks, Lizzie, and hello, everybody, and welcome. I was actually just thinking, Lizzie, this isn't just a podcast, it's a conversation that has a podcast in it. And many podcasts have seasons. We haven't had a season, we just had 362 conversations. But our second season could be starting at the beginning with all the same sources and just going around again. We'd have very different things to say, I think, from here. It'd be excellent conversations, but I don't think we're going to run out of sources. I think we're going to be fine. So I want to just this source is available in our Facebook group, which you're all very welcome to join, or you can get it each week in the email. Just go to turningtowards.life and sign up for the email, and you'll get it with the video each week. And so you'll get sources, wonderful sources every week for as long as we're doing this, which is going to be forever, of course, Lizzie, or something like that. Or you can come to turningtowards.life and all the sources are there, and they're also with all the show notes for all the ways that this goes out as a podcast. This particular source, I want to just say thanks because I haven't credited it fully. So it's John O'Donoghue, the wonderful poet and philosopher, speaking in an interview that gave rise to this text. But I found it on a website that's called The Marginalian, run by Maria Popp. And I want to just say thank you to Maria, who's the contribution to the world that Maria makes by putting out The Marginalian is so extraordinary. And I have come across life-changing books, particularly on The Marginalian, that I read them and I wonder how I knew about them. And I realize it was from Maria very, very often. So thank you to Maria. And if you don't know The Marginalian, please go and find it. It's really, really worth it. And there's years and years and years of also wonderful resource and writing there. So this is The Wildness in Our Hearts, and it's from an interview with John O'Donoghue. Every human person is inevitably involved with two worlds: the world they carry within them and the world that is out there. All thinking, all writing, all action, all creation, and all destruction is about that bridge between the two worlds. Each one of us is the custodian of an inner world that we carry around with us. Now, other people can glimpse it from its outer expressions, but no one but you knows what your inner world is actually like, and no one can force you to reveal it until you actually tell them about it. And that's the whole mystery of writing and language and expression, that when you do say it, what others hear and what you intend to know are often totally different things. And one of the sad things today is that so many people are frightened by the wonder of their own presence. They're dying to tie themselves into a system or to a role or to an image or to a predetermined identity that other people have actually settled on for them. And the identity may be totally at variance with the wild energies that are rising inside their souls. Many of us get very afraid and we eventually compromise. We settle for something that is safe rather than engaging the danger and the wildness that is in our own hearts.
Justin, The Wildness in Our Hearts by John O'Donohue. Every human person is inevitably involved with two worlds, the world they carry within them and the world that is out there. All thinking, all writing, all action, all creation, and all destruction is about that bridge between the two worlds. Each one of us is the custodian of an inner world that we carry around with us. Now, other people can glimpse it from its outer expressions, but no one but you knows what your inner world is actually like. And no one can force you to reveal it until you actually tell them about it. That's the whole mystery of writing and language and expression, that when you do say it, what others hear and what you intend and know are often totally different kinds of things. One of the sad things today is that so many people are frightened by the wonder of their own presence. They're dying to tie themselves into a system, a role, or to an image, or to a predetermined identity that other people have actually settled on for them. This identity may be totally at variance with the wild energies that are rising inside their souls. Many of us get very afraid. And we eventually compromise. We settle for something that is safe rather than engaging the danger and the wildness that is in our own hearts.
One of the things that is amazing about these three paragraphs, Lizzie, is how much gets packed in here. And the way I'm thinking about it is, so we have an inside that's knowable only to us, and an outside that other people can relate to, and they're related to one another because the inside comes through to the outside, but what we can express and show is only part of the inside. So then we emerge into a world, and one of our great difficulties and our great pains is that we know the inside and other people don't. And so we've got a challenge here already, which is how do I make my inside known to others? Which is really hard to do, and it's what John O'Donohue is saying, that all language and expression and creation and destruction happens in that interplay. And so then, to add to the complication of it, other people have varying degrees of welcome to our inside. And so the outside that they experience, we very quickly get into presenting an outside that is going to be acceptable in the world that we're in. So we temper and modify and police our own inside. On its way out to the outside, so that we can belong and we don't get thrown out and we stay safe and all of those kind of things. So now we're in that dynamic. And then we're caught in the tension of this vast inside that only we know, and the very often the deep, deep disjunction between the inside and the outside. And so here we come to the last paragraph where he says, that frightens us so much. We're so frightened by our wondrous complexity and depth that most of the time we'd rather tie ourselves into an image which somebody else gave us, because it gets rid of all of the danger, it gets rid of all of the risk, it gets rid of all of the shame and the uncertainty and the being misunderstood. It feels safer for us to tie our outside, but then also to try and tie our inside into the image so that we can belong. And so through this whole chain of events, in order to be social beings and be with other people, that's so important. Very often, what we end up doing is denying or forgetting or exiling, or in other ways, suppressing the wildness and the danger and the aliveness of our inside in order to keep it safe on the outside. And there's the whole, there's the whole set up. And I was thinking whilst you were reading, I think this is probably true of all of us, right? We don't always know that that's what we've done to ourselves. We don't know that we've cut off our inside in order to create an outside that can belong and can fit in with other people. So we have no idea that we've exiled this and we've put this bit to sleep and we've suppressed that until moments when we can get a glimpse of it, and we get a glimpse in some kind of deep longing for something, like we hear a piece of music that awakens something in us that we had no idea was there, or we meet a person and in the person's presence something in us comes forward that we really didn't know. Or we hike on a mountain, or we go to the ocean, or a book comes into our hands that points to something that we've long ago tried to get out of the way because of this dynamic. And what a wondrous and shaking, earth-shaking disruption that can be. And because that can feel so dangerous and so frightening, I'm very, very grateful for John O'Donohue's words in the end, in this last paragraph, about the wonder of our own presence. That what we're coming into contact with then is the wonder of our own presence. It can feel really shaky and really risky, but very often it's some kind of marvelousness. And then he talks about the danger and the wildness that's in our heart. And I am so glad that I've had the chance to be around people and practices in the last 20 years of my life, particularly that have kept on calling me back into this. It's, I think, a lifetime's work. But when I do a lot of writing and journaling and drawing and things like that, and when I look at the inside of my journal, which sort of exposes my wild and dangerous insides onto the page, I get reminded of something about me that I really have to pay attention to if I want to bring it into the outside world. But I can see it because I have a practice like that. So I suppose one of the ways I'm coming into this conversation is in gratitude for people and practices, but particularly actually now for people who, with me, have been able to see beyond the role or the image or the predetermined identity that by which I've in my life tried to tie myself, and who've been able to see the something on the, even if they could only get a glimpse of it, like there's something there that isn't this. Let me welcome it in you, has been so necessary.
So much going on in me, Justin, as you're speaking. And just that last thing you said about when someone sees the thing that's not the thing you made your life into, from with all these adjustments and fitting inness that we try and do, and image management, and having you think that I'm a certain kind of person because then you'll like me or accept me, or I'll be part of something, or I'll be deemed good or something. And then someone sees the part of you that's like just not about that, which of course is everyone, isn't it? We're all doing this, as John O'Donohue says. There's an inner and an outer, and very rarely really we get to inquire into the inner worlds of one another in the way that we ordinarily live our lives. And how wonderful that there are people and ways of being a person where you can see beyond. We can see beyond the construction to the heart of things and to the wildness that's trying to peep out. And I'm with you that there are certain people who seem like an invitation to that as well. Like I have these standout moments where I'm watching someone going, oh, I could be like that too. Justin, we've often talked about dancing. And the kind of very, when I think about it, extraordinary constraints we have in our normal culture that tell us we can't like dance along the street or something. Otherwise, everyone will go, oh. But the reason they're going, oh, is because we're expressing something in the world that is not ordinarily not acceptable on a train or in the road or whatever. Like there's rules. There's like a set of rules of how we should be in each environment and how close we should stand to one another and how fast we should walk along the street. And even just that basic stuff of just walking out your house, it's all there. It's all there's a there's an environmental force that is made up of all of us, of what you should and shouldn't do. And then there's the wildness that comes forth and some kind of expression of someone's inner world, which then gives me permission to be some expression of my inner world that is not out here yet. And I think dancing has been one of those places for me where at some point along the way, I threw off all of the shackles of what that should look like and who I should be and whether I should do it or not, and decided to allow my body to do what it wanted to do where I was. And that is such a joy to have a body that can do the thing it wants to do. And this, all of these constraints feel to me like they're so manifested in the way that bodies are allowed or not allowed or given permission to move the way they want to move or not or whatever. And I'm so grateful for those permissions that have been given to me along the way. And I think this is one of those realms where I think it becomes completely obvious to me that we are for each other. So whoever we're being is an invitation to other people around us. And whoever other people are being, they're an invitation to me. And I'm so glad of any kind of liberation that exists from these patterns that you were talking about. Because it gives me the permission to throw them off in any moment and have a go at doing something differently that feels tricky and fearful and dangerous and wild. And I'm so grateful that that's available to us as human beings. And of course, there are still like hundreds and hundreds of layers of societal me that probably will keep emerging as I keep noticing and keep noticing. And that right next to all those layers is always this inner wildness available to me. And I also wanted to say that everything's relative. So your wildness might be not putting the spoons in the spoon section of the dishwasher a couple of times and seeing how that feels. And my wildness might be doing something really properly and seeing what that reveals, because often I do things in a quite a wild way already, kind of thing. So it depends where we're at also in our wildness and how, like, I feel really curious about all the ways that I'm trying to control things being the way that they are in relationship to this wildness thing. So as much as I'm trying to control the way you see me in the world and my wildness is in relationship to that, even when it's not about being seen in the world, but just the way that I already do things, I think it's possible to get into this conversation in a really, really small way, like putting my pants on before I put my socks on, or my socks on before I put my pants on, and feeling what it feels like to not do things the way I've always done them. Like there's a way of getting in touch with this that's not major and life-shattering or anything. But I think I get really patterned. And then in the noticing of my patternedness, and I do something different, something else is there, which might be something to do with the wonder of my own presence being revealed, because I guess my habitualness also masks my presence. So I know when I do something in a very habitual way, it's quite hard for me to remember what happened. But if I do something in a slightly different way, it's alive. There's some aliveness in it that has me be able to remember it and feel it and have sensations attached to it that are meaningful to me. Whereas my patternedness keeps me quite sleepy and less available to life and what's here because I'm kind of sealed in a way.
Such a there's so much in what you say, Lizzie. This point about patternedness and how it might conceal our wildness seems so alive for me that we, when you were talking about dancing, and dancing is a big topic for me, It's been hugely developmental, as you know, practice for me. And as a person who has grown up in a community where there are lots and lots of life cycle events where people dance, it's often been a thing for me when, the band strikes up and people are dancing. And I'm then caught in the, I feel too ashamed to go in this, I feel too ashamed not to go in this. And then I go. And one of the things I realize about the ways in which people often dance, sort of like contempt, I don't even know what the right language, I'm going to really mess up on my language here, but sort of like contemporary dancing to pop or disco or that kind of music, like the way people move in that. One of the things I'm realizing from your description of it is that part of my difficulty with it is that I feel like it's hard for me to belong in that form of movement. And so when I go and dance that way, I feel angular and awkward and exposed and visible and all kinds of things about it. And what I really want to do is, I think what I've really wanted to do for a lot of my life is not be in it. But actually now I think I also realize that I have wanted to be in it, but just in a different way. And there are other forms of dance available to me that are becoming much more interesting to me because of that. But the patterning of how everyone dances is kind of, it's not like it's a bad thing. The fact that we all know how to conduct ourselves in that particular environment, that there are some rules of engagement, is how societies get built and how cultures get built. It's a bit like all agreeing to drive on the same side of the road and not just going, well, I'm feeling wild today, I'll put my car on the other side and we'll see what happens. So we need all of that, absolutely. But then starting to see that a lot of that patterning, particularly the parts that we take on because we feel like that's how we get to belong in our particular family systems, like if I'm neat when inside I'm, or if I'm, that patterning tunes us out to the wildness inside us. And I loved what you said, that sometimes shifting something, doing something a different way, even something very small. Like for me, I've been experimenting just with my posture. Just a very, very slight shift in my posture puts me in contact with something else inside me that I'm not so used to being in contact with. That is, so that move, or having a creative practice. Remember Brené Brown saying once that if we don't have a creative practice somewhere in our lives, then what we've got is a corrosive practice, because we're not finding a place where this aliveness can burst forth. And I think that one of the things that we forget, because I think a conversation like this could sound like the thing to do is throw off all the shackles of agreed convention, throw them all off, run naked through the streets. And we know that there are dangers and perils in that too, in what kind of societies we build if we don't also have agreed ways of taking care of one another and taking care of our. So if it's not run naked through the streets, what it might be is starting to have people who can point out to us the what I wanted to say was all of this is life force. Or John O'Donohue, I think, is saying is that we are life wanting to make itself express. That's what we are. But we imagine that we're the pattern. So I go, oh, I'm a quiet person, or I'm an introverted person, or I'm a diligent person, or I'm a. All of that can be true. But if what it does is all the patterns around that, if what it does is it puts a cap on my own life force, and the first thing it does is it puts a cap on my own experience of being life force. And then what you're saying is so enlivening. Like, what happens if I start to shift one bit of patterning in my life that so that I can have more of a chance of having the danger and the wildness that in our own hearts get given a place to see what that's like, and then open it a bit wider and open it a bit wider and open it a bit wider. And where it ends, I think, where it leads to is the capacity to dance the way everyone is dancing, because that's what's called for in that particular dance, in contact with the wildness of our own hearts, because we've also got, and that kind of dancing is completely different, even if you're making the same moves. It's completely different from I'm just going to try and fit into what everyone's doing. Because we've also got places and people around us that are really helping us be in contact, that we are life itself wanting to be known.
The word, Justin, that you just said that's really resonating with me is aliveness. Like, what if I could measure my life by aliveness? and let that be the barometer for whether I should change something up or keep something the same, or that there's a way of that word being like a North Star and trusting that that's a doable, good thing to say to myself. Well, I wonder what kind of aliveness this is bringing me now. And, when you said about Brené Brown's creative practice thing, I know that whenever I'm engaging in something creative, there's always like a jeopardy there. There's always a load of self-belief that's like, well, I can't do this. The creative process is so illuminating of all of my self-doubt and issues around my own capacity to make things and have ideas and all those things. And yet, I guess, what would you say, like the benefit or the what arrives in me, what I get from it, what I receive is a kind of aliveness that whatever the product of my creativity looks like, in the process of doing it is the aliveness. That's where the aliveness lands. I was talking to somebody about yesterday that she said my mum was a really great painter, and she now teaches people who are unable to see because her sight has gone to do art, and they do it by feeling and all kinds of things. And she was saying, are you artistic? I think was her question, or are you creative or something? And I said, well, there's part of me that wants to say no, because it's not like I can paint a picture of you and it would look like you. It would probably look like somebody else and maybe a different species. But I could have a go and it would be creative, but it wouldn't be accurate to life necessarily. Maybe I can work on that and become more skillful and everything, but I don't have like an innate talent for making likeness on a page to the thing I'm painting or something. But I don't see myself as uncreative. But that's, and I think, I guess that's what we're talking about here, is that there's a creative process in us that is to do with life force and aliveness, that isn't to do with whether you think my drawing looks like the tree I'm trying to draw or not. That's not the point. And I think this wildness conversation, inquiry points to that for me, is that the wildness feels to me like it's to do with our own gift, our own being, which is much, much less in relationship to what things should be like, what they must be like, who I must become because of the role that someone said I should take up or something. And so the listening to that and the letting that be here feels like it's very likely to be revealed and for us to come into contact with it in some kind of creative process. Because the creative process doesn't have to be to do with outcome. It can be to do with sitting down and confronting the blank page and allowing whatever the process is of being creative to be right there. And even if, as I'm saying it and imagining it, I can feel the aliveness in it. It might not be comfortable. It might not be like safe and easy, but it's definitely alive. So this word aliveness feels really filled with antidote for me. Like it's hard to judge something by how good it is or how much it fits what should be being done or something. That feels harder in this conversation to me than to go and to know I'm on the right track, than to go, well, what kind of aliveness does this bring me? And how alive do I feel right now? And how much of my bodily life force is drawn in here? And how much gets put to sleep by doing this? And how can I use my intentionality about that as well? And I don't know if I've said this before, Justin, but for some reason, one of the biggest things that ever stuck with me is somebody telling me that you could do the washing up like you're doing a dance. And honestly, in all the places that I feel like my wildness is ripped away from me because I don't want to do this dishwasher again, I don't want to do the washing again, I don't, like, I've had enough. But it has to be done because there's children who need clothes to be clean, and I need clean clothes, and I've run out of knickers or whatever's happened. I have to do the thing. How can I then imbue my wildness into that thing that's also available because there's wildness practices elsewhere that I know how to access that? And thank goodness for that, that I can load the dishwasher with a dance and feel less resentment or feel less hemmed in because I can employ the wildness that I've made contact with in a creative process into a place that feels really uncreative and then make that creative as well.
What a great place to end, Lizzie. How we can bring our life force into everything. And that's also where I want to end. I want to come back to one line from John O'Donohue here. One of the sad things today is that so many people are frightened by, and I would say, or have forgotten, the wonder of their own presence. That Lizzie and Justin are each one-time events in this universe, that this is life working itself out by you being here, Lizzie, or by me being here. And one of the opportunities that we have is to really encounter, let ourselves encounter what life is here in this one, in this particular form. And in order to do that, we almost certainly have to do it whilst we're doing the washing. Because where else is there, apart from in the midst of the lives in which we're living, rather than in some fantasy, I'm going to go off and I don't know what for 10 years or something. Right in the lives that we're living, there's an opportunity to tap into, to learn how to find, make contact with the wild energies that are rising inside our souls. So it's been fantastic being in this conversation and feeling into that together, Lizzie. Thank you very much. And thank you, everybody who's with us. Some of you again and again and again. If you feel like you'd want to come back our way with some contact or some support, you can email us hello at or Lizzie or Justin at turningtowards.life. And also on our turningtowards.life website, you can click on the support us button and buy us a cup of coffee or other ways to support us there. Or no one's done this for a while. If you're on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, you could find your way to the review bit and leave us a review of how you're experiencing this, and that will help other people to find us too. All of those, or you can just watch and listen whenever you wish. That's wonderful too. Thank you for being with us, and we're gonna say goodbye.
Bye, everyone.